This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We acknowledge the traditional owners of this country and pay our respects to elders past and present. Welcome to Under One Blue Roof, your podcast exploring the problem of climate-driven homelessness. Here, we ponder some of the big questions about housing, social justice, planetary boundaries, and more, and listen to stories from experts in the field who explain just how it's all related. Let's get to know the human face of climate change.
Hi, and thanks for joining us Under One Blue Roof. I'm your host, Marushka Saldana, a Master of Environment student and social enterprise practitioner. And today we're talking about a just transition to renewable energy. I'm really delighted to have Christy Batista on the show today. Christy is the Chief Technology Officer Global and General Manager Australia of Illume Energy, a solar technology company that has developed a world-first solution which enables multi-dwelling residents to access solar energy. With almost 20 years' experience, Christy leads technical teams to commercialize and scale innovations. She is an expert in taking technically complex projects from concept through to a commercially manufacturable product, which meets a market need. Aside from her technical expertise, Christy has founded her career on understanding what makes people tick. She has an authentic leadership style and a deep passion for creating inclusive environments and teams that give individuals the opportunity to thrive. Christy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Marushka. I'm really happy to be here and obviously very passionate about the topic of this podcast.
I am so excited to talk to you about all the things that we have lined up on today's episode. Apartment buildings are one of the final frontiers for solar energy, and rooftop solar has been traditionally really tricky to have in these types of residences and dwellings. And we know renewable energy is not just critical for saving on energy bills, but also for mitigating climate change and fostering sustainable development within the energy sector, but also across our society more broadly. The reality, though, as we know, is access to solar is not currently equitable to all Australians. But thankfully, this is slowly changing. I think we can agree. There's a fundamental connection between home and energy and climate and how we care for each of these dimensions of our life. So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, Christy, and what does place or home mean to you?
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you're starting here because I think it is really important to frame up the discussion that we're going to have. So, yeah, I'm Melbourne born and raised. I'm a person of fairly humble beginnings, but for my whole life, I've really known that I want to leave the world a little better for me having been part of it. And as I've gone along in life, I've realized that the way I can do that is to help solve problems that really matter to the world. And specifically within that, it's been for me about building really inclusive environments that allow people to thrive and then helping individuals really grow and reach their potential. And then those two things coming together obviously puts you in a much better position to solve those problems that matter, which we'll get into in more detail in the podcast. But I want to also just bring a little bit of me to life and share how I love to spend my time outside of work and career. And for me, it's being in nature, it's having adventures, and it's being with really good, wholehearted people and building that community. So that's the magic trifecta for me of how I love to spend my time: nature, adventure, and good people. So I love to surf, to cycle, to basically move in nature. And that's my time to really let my soul run free. And that ties into that question of place and home for me. I think that place and home is about where you can rest your head and your heart and feel safe and loved. And more over the years, it has been going to nature because I feel really alive and connected and supported there. And to help make this relatable. Like in the lockdowns of 2020 in Melbourne, I was living on my own and I was living in an area at the time where I didn't feel that connected to community. And anyone that was in Melbourne at the time knows that we had 5K radiuses that we were locked into. So it was hard if you weren't near your people. And I remember this tree out the front of my place that I'd watched grow for years, and just having a cup of tea and looking at the leaves change through the seasons, particularly that autumn season, I just found that really soothing. And, you know, I find it a similar thing with the ocean, that sometimes I feel like the ocean's calling to me to have that saltwater therapy and that joy that you get from sort of playing in the ocean. I think the more that we can all realize we are connected to the birds, the bees and the trees, the closer we'll come to healing our planet. And the Indigenous amongst us know this better than any of us. And that question of home and place for me, I heard a quote a few years ago from Maya Angelou that really resonated powerfully. And it said, "I belong no place. I belong every place. The price is high and the reward is great." And the way I interpreted that for me is that, you know, first and foremost, you need to belong to yourself, to your values and what makes you really tick. And sometimes that price is high because you need to walk your own independent path and not worry so much about fitting in. But why I think the reward is great is that you can find that feeling of belonging anywhere in the world amongst different people of different ages and cultures and backgrounds. And that is the reward, right? That beauty of the big and beautiful world. And I share this because I think this ties deeply to why I care so much about, yeah, the environment and saving our planet and also the humanity and community within that.
Yeah, there is so much to find of ourselves in nature. And seeking that connection, I think, is something we can all relate to, particularly emerging after the COVID lockdowns and finding that we all had this really profound sense of what it meant to be home, but also what it meant to go into these open green spaces that were basically our refuge in many ways in that time. And yeah, I love that. That's so tied into your personal values and approach to what you do in your work. And I think fundamentally for so many of us, that is a common thread in our lives. And I want to talk a bit about renewable energy as a global movement, because it is very much that for a lot of us at the moment. It's front of mind, the energy transition is here. And we know that that's really important to think about, but also people in their local community need to be empowered to participate in the solution. Can you break down for us some of the basics of the technology behind solar and how it actually works?
Sure. Happy to do that. I'm a technology person. I'm a CTO, so I should definitely be able to do this, but let's see how it goes. Solar is, I suppose, the mechanism to convert energy from the sun into power. So a stat I'll just share is the amount of sunlight that hits the Earth's surface in 1.5 hours is enough to handle powering the entire world for a full year. It's pretty remarkable when you think about that. If you could capture and harness it, it's pretty amazing. Something that captures and harnesses that sun is the solar panels. So you could see everything from a residential panel that you see on standalone homes to solar farms that are laid out across acres of land. And within those solar panels, there's something called photovoltaic cells or PV, and they're made up of a semiconductor, something like silicon, that basically creates an electric current when it's exposed to photons of sunlight. So that current then is a DC or direct current. We're getting into a little bit of electronics, don't worry, it won't get too heavy. So there's that DC current that's running along the wires of the panel. but that needs to be converted to AC or alternating current, because that's what comes out of the sockets that you have in your home to, you know, power your kettle or your fridge or any appliance. And that's done by an inverter, big-ish box that's often placed in a home's garage to convert that DC to AC so that the energy can be used in the home. And then finally, maybe just to talk a little bit about batteries. So not every solar installation will have a battery. I think batteries will definitely become more and more prominent in the community because it allows the capture of that excess solar energy that you haven't used when the sun's shining to be captured in the battery so that you're not exporting to the grid and you can use that at a time that suits you. So then you're actually utilising your solar energy potentially at night when there's no sun shining. So, yeah, that'd be the quick masterclass in the technology behind solar.
I feel like I already know so much more as someone who is not an engineer. That was very easy to follow and understand. And it made me think about a podcast I've been listening to with an energy expert from the US. His name's Nate Hagans, and he coined this term energy blindness to kind of represent one of the greatest, perhaps, and most dangerous blind spots of modern culture, in that we don't realize we swim in energy like fish swim in water. It's all around us. It powers everything that we do and every aspect of our lives that we engage in. And so having this imperative to move away from growth at all costs by way of fossil fuels, knowing what it does to our planet, having something that is powered by the nature that we have access to, the sun, is really so innovative. And yet, in a lot of places within Australia, around the world, still not utilized and taken up perhaps at the scale that it should be. And I guess that's because we are in this transition and it's not as simple as just clicking your fingers and doing it overnight. And I think solar for apartment buildings has been the trickiest part of that equation in many ways. For a number of reasons, it's been difficult to install and operate solar on a shared roof. And of course, we know there are so many people that do live in apartment buildings, in social housing. I myself am an apartment dweller and I love it. The lifestyle is amazing, but the options are really limited in some ways, but perhaps not so much anymore because of what Alume Energy is doing in this space, which is so exciting. I want to ask you, what are some of the barriers that apartments have faced in this transition to renewable energy? And how is Alume Energy changing this?
Obviously, there is roof space on apartment and multi-dwelling buildings, but traditionally, there's been no way for people to access this. And some of the barriers mean technical challenges, ownership challenges. So having a mix of owners and renters in the same multi-dwelling building can create challenges. There can be decision-making challenges. So if you're living in a strata or owner's corp system, you know, there needs to be agreement or consensus around making changes to the building. And then access to finance is a really big one I'll talk about a lot today. So average residents of standalone homes earn 20% more than apartment residents on average. And that discrepancy is even bigger in some countries like the US as an example. So therefore, the upfront cost of solar installation can be prohibitive for many that are in multi-dwelling buildings. Basically, Alume was founded to change that. So our mission is developing and scaling world-first solutions to empower those multi-dwelling customers with rooftop solar. So the SolShare is a world-first product, and it allows the solar that's generated from a single rooftop solar installation, so that like the panels I was talking about before, to be distributed and shared by the residents of that apartment building. So it's a hardware and a software solution, and it sits behind the meter at the main switchboard, And basically it distributes the solar to separately metered apartments in that building. And so at the moment, we currently have about 1,500 apartments in Australia, including a big portion of them being in social housing connected up to solar because of the Soul Share. And we're entering the US and UK. So we've got 100 apartments connected up in the US and 50 in the UK. And we'll be scaling up that number significantly in the coming years. So we're super excited about the change that we can really make and really empower the residents of these buildings to get access to solar. You know, people like yourself that might love to have access to it and haven't been able to find a way prior to this.
Yeah, and you were mentioning this idea of distributed and shared power, which I think is becoming so important within communities as we figure out the ways that we've been living are inherently quite unsustainable. And going back to that idea of collective and communal living in many ways can open up these new pathways for energy to come into places like apartments and be part of this shift towards becoming a more sustainable and thriving and fair society. And I think this is so key to that movement. And that is really exciting because, like we said, it hasn't been an option for many for a long time. And the fact that that's changing is such a crucial component of what we mean when we say a just transition. It's about not leaving anyone behind in that, which is so true of anything to do with innovation and technology. It can develop at this really rapid sort of pace and momentum. And often what we see is parts of our society benefiting from that and others not being able to access it at all. And that's almost defeating the point of, I guess, what you try to do in those spaces. But this, I think, really answers a lot of those problems quite directly. Often, as we've said, people living in apartments, including and perhaps especially renters and social housing residents who maybe don't have as much bargaining power when it comes to things like solar, have not been able to access it because it hasn't been an option. But SoulShare, as you mentioned, is changing that. And that's a really powerful thing to be leading and to be a part of. What does an equitable approach to rooftop solar uptake look like for people who are experiencing hardship and disadvantage? What are your thoughts on that?
This is super topical. You know, we're in a global energy crisis right now. The price of electricity has increased more than 30% in Victoria in this year alone. So that's where I am in Melbourne. And this is only going to increase that energy disparity gap we already have. So it's going to increase a difference between the haves. So those able to afford something like rooftop solar and those that can't afford it. And you might, this is flowing into those cost of living pressures that we're hearing about more and more. There's more and more people being pushed into poverty and homelessness. I heard stories just the other day of people treating food as a luxury item and just heartbreaking stories of, you know, parents pretending that they're full so that their children will eat the last food in the house. And this is despite Australia being one of the most food secure countries in the world. So we're seeing this increase in the working poor. So this is where their expenses are greater than income. So it's not necessarily demographic that people picture when they think of homelessness or poverty. These are people that are working and can't make ends meet. And so I think we really have to protect the most vulnerable in our community, and reducing their energy burden is one part of a holistic solution. So I want to bring this to life with a bit of a story. There's a Housing Choices community in Altona, Victoria, that's a multi-dwelling building that houses 44 families. We put a 66 kilowatt solar installation in there a couple of years back, thanks to the SolShare technology. And the residents have experienced over a 40% reduction in their electricity bills because of this. And Ravi was a real champion of this installation. So it's really important to have those community champions. And he gave us the feedback that for the first time last year, these residents could afford to actually turn the heating on. And if anyone can feel how cold it is in Melbourne, and it's only May now, you know how cold it gets in winter. So it's pretty significant. And I don't think many people realise how many deaths are actually caused in Australia by what's called moderately cold homes, because things like social housing was often built 20 years ago and before there was minimum build standards. So the energy efficiency of these houses are not good. They're some of the lowest in Australia. So you can imagine how cold and drafty they are and how hard it would be if you couldn't turn the heating on for your family.
That choice between do I put food on the table or do I turn on my heater is such a reality for so many families and households that are doing it tough. And as you mentioned, the cost of living plus the energy crisis that we're in the midst of is compounding, and it's hitting people who are already doing it tough. It's hitting them the hardest. And we understand that and we know that and see that. To hear stories of the impact that SolShare and Alume Energy and solutions like it can have on people, it's so inspiring, because we need more of that. And we're definitely seeing, I think, this tipping point of how we've traditionally thought about and used energy. And we've spoken a little bit about the technical side of how solar works, but I want to shift a little bit to maybe the philosophical question behind how we view this transition and maybe what's slowing us down and what's maybe going to make us go faster. Because we know that solar is one way to power our homes without fossil fuels. And that's critical because we burn them and they harm the planet. That much is evident. So if we already do have the technology that we need, then how do we shift our will? And I think that's an important distinction between having what we need at the right price, but needing to bring people along for that journey at the political and the household level. What's required to really commit to the transition?
So I believe we need strong policy to really move to the next level. So I'm going to share some examples from around the world. The US has the Inflation Reduction Act that went through last year, which is huge. And within that, there's a 50% tax credit for solar on low-income housing. So you can imagine how that affects that funding cost we talked about. In Europe, there's a $4 billion fund to decarbonise social housing. In the UK, there's a £4 billion fund for energy efficiency upgrades on the worst performing buildings. And even if we look more locally to a smaller measure, in Victoria, for standalone homes, you can access a solar rebate of $1,400 that comes off the installation cost, and a four-year interest-free loan of a further $1,400. I myself accessed these opportunities just this last year to put solar on my townhouse. That's the first time I've ever had access to solar. But that type of rebate system isn't available on multi-dwelling buildings or apartment buildings. So I feel like we have the sun. We have solid solar economics in Australia. It actually stacks up a lot better than a lot of other countries. We've got a really strong installer network in Australia. There's plenty of installers out there. Now we really need access to that low-cost financing option. So Elume's really been pushing for the government to provide zero-interest loans for owners' corporations and also social housing. We really feel like that'd create a real tailwind. And look, the budget that was released this week was super exciting and may take us some of the way there. So just a couple of highlights from the budget that are really significant. There was record funding of almost $25 billion for clean energy spending, which is a massive improvement on the budget prior to this. There was $1.3 billion to invest to establish household energy upgrades. And $1 billion of that is going to be for low interest loans for solar and insulation upgrades. I don't really know the details of how that's accessible yet. It's very new information. And then also $300 million to support upgrades to social housing, which does include solar. And again, details TBD. But I believe there's some really great innovative solutions out there, right? To save, it sounds heavy, but to save humanity and our planet. And we need to be working together in this spirit of inclusion to create a clean energy ecosystem. We are a lucky country. We are resource rich. We're rich in sun and wind. And that clean energy transition can also be such an amazing jobs opportunity too for Australia. And there is also great work that's being done at a local council level. But what we really need now is strong visionary leadership at a government and policy level to provide those tailwinds to really scale that implementation.
I'm hearing that there are a lot of layers to how this is going to play out. And that is pretty common of any systems problem that we think about, and energy and homelessness and housing and all of these different sort of pieces, also social equity, kind of play together in this really intricate and complex way. And we know that by doing something here, we're affecting something over there. So to start with the policy that we need and to see funding being allocated in a way that is going to be more useful and effective is definitely pushing us in the right direction, I would agree. And it's an exciting time to be in this space, knowing that there's so much coming. I want to move now to talk a little bit about you. And you've mentioned that leadership around these issues and creating teams and environments where this kind of work can thrive and really be impactful is part of your purpose and part of how you see the world. And I think many people can relate to that because there's a strong sense of needing to do something with the time that we have. And I want to ask you about your vision for a sustainable and equitable climate future and what that means to you. And I might frame that by saying that we know that more medium density dwellings perhaps are required to meet the growing demand for housing that's both affordable and climate resilient. So both of those things. How do we achieve a just transition to renewable energy at a scale for people that currently are and will be living in apartment buildings in the future?
It's a lot within that. So I think where I'll start is Australia leads the transition in standalone rooftop solar. There's 30% penetration of solar on standalone homes. But there's 2 million apartment residents that are missing out, right? So last year was actually the first time since 2015 that solar installation rates dropped, which is pretty interesting. When you think about it, that's because the same market's been sold into for a decade. But what it shows is that to reach that speed and breadth of penetration we need as a country to meet global warming targets, we need to see solar on multi-dwelling buildings. But with the cost of housing being unattainable to most, we've got to think about what that looks like. And we actually talked about that a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, that no longer will Australian residents on the whole be living in traditional homes with a backyard. The future is going to be more about living in these medium density dwellings and utilising shared green spaces, which can be a really like beautiful and positive thing. If you look to one of the more populous and expensive cities in Sydney, I believe 98% of new build approvals are for strata or apartments. So it shows you that more and more medium density dwelling is going to come. And it's just logical, right? The population in the world's growing, they have to go somewhere. It's just obvious that we need clean tech solutions for medium density dwellings. And Alume's enabling technology is a great example of that. But it really needs to be one solution of many. It needs to be part of a broader ecosystem that includes a myriad of solutions. So as an example, I've mentioned energy efficiency. The energy efficiency of our buildings in Australia is pretty terrible. And simple things like improved insulation would mean a reduction in energy use, right? Which is good for that cost of living, but it's also good for the planet. And it means a more comfortable standard of living, right? This is about comfort and in some cases, safety and health. And I'm super passionate and really believe you can't create a sustainable world without creating a more just world. You can't have only the wealthy being able to access technology and clean technology solutions, because it means the least able are going to wear that rising cost of more traditional sources of energy. It just does not stack up, and we can't reach our global warming targets without bringing everyone along for this transition. And the climate crisis, it's not just an ecological crisis. It's a crisis of inequity, a crisis of inclusion, and more, it's going to become a crisis of resiliency and even security if we don't take everyone on this journey to a livable future. To make that more relatable, if you look to the 2020 and 2021 bushfires, over 65,000 people were displaced from their homes and thousands more by floods last year. So these natural events have caused thousands to be cut off from grid electricity. And the situation's probably only going to get worse if we're honest about it, right? Extreme weather fluctuations are predicted to increase. Therefore, we need enabling solutions that improve grid stability and provide on-site generation for all of us in society. Look, despite all of this, I do believe there is hope, right? There is hope. We've got to keep going. But it has to be about action and not just talk. And, you know, even at an individual level, I know it can feel overwhelming, but I think just try to play the part that you can play. There's little things that you can do every day to reduce your burden on the planet. You know, for me, some things I've changed is really reducing, I'd say, year on year, my plastic use by just thinking a little bit smarter. You know, why do I need Glad Wrap when I can use a container, or I can put a plate over leftovers in the fridge? There's little things that everyone can do, and every little bit helps. So I do think it's a little bit of a cop-out when people just say, well, I can't really have an impact. We can all have an impact. And if everyone sort of approach life to say, I'm going to give more than I take, that would make change too. So look, my hope is that in my time, I live to see Alume's vision come true. And that's a world where everyone can access clean and affordable energy from the sun.
That's amazing. And I think if we have the technology, we have the will, the investment, and the people leading the movement that are required to bring it to everyone who needs it, then we're at the start of this really exciting journey towards, like, what does a well-being economy look like that's built on renewable energy and solar for everyone. And that equity and inclusion piece is so, so critical. And like you said, there are these waves of disaster that do keep coming our way because of our changing climate. And that's going to mean that the resiliency of our energy systems are challenged and tested time and time again. And we need more options available to us that increase our ability to be resilient and to recover. And I'm just so pleased to have been able to speak to you about this, Christy. You have a wealth of knowledge and just such a honest approach to what this means for the world that we live in. And it's exciting to see Alum in this space leading the charge. So thank you so much for your time. And yeah, it's been awesome talking to you.
Thanks, Marushka. I've really enjoyed it too. And I think these are really important conversations to have. We're going to keep fighting it alone. We'll keep finding a way. And there's many others that are out there doing amazing work. So let's keep pushing. We can get there. And yeah, I really appreciate your time and bringing these conversations out there to society. So thank you.